listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups Podcast. This week, Dave and I are just catching up. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had just an updates episode, so that's what this week is all about. So after some fantastic guests and a lot of inspiration and education in the last couple of weeks, Dave and I are going to bore everybody with updates on our lives and our businesses. So Dave, how's it going?
It's good. I'm ready to be boring, you know.
Yeah. It's something we excel at. I think that's why our listeners love us.
Yes, yes. And a shout out to Andrew Culver, who was here last week. I listened to the episode, and that was some fantastic stuff about test-driven development. So Andrew and I have had other conversations, not about that, but about Bullet Train and other things that he's working on. So that was a great perspective to hear. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, for sure. We've gotten more feedback on that episode than we've gotten in a long, long time. People are saying, oh, I'm totally kind of adopting this way of thinking, or I've been thinking about doing this a lot, and this totally kind of sent me over the edge. I'm talking to my development team now, so yeah, it's really cool. And then, of course, I talked to some of my developers, and they're like, no, that's stupid. You shouldn't do that. So so then I have to try and play expert, so that's kind of dangerous, but it's all good.
Yeah, well, I mean, my plugin developers have been trying to talk me into this for a long time, and for AWPCP, it turned out to be an easier sell than with Business Directory, but you know, I think in the end we just have to have this. You're not, you know, you get to a certain point and a size, and when you start doing refactoring, the lack of these tests really hampers your progress because you start breaking all kinds of shit. I mean, when we released 5.0, our lack of tests probably cost us, oh, I don't know, a couple of months of beta testing time, just going back and fixing shit that used to work.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's tough, but it's, I mean, at the same time, as a business owner, it's tough to say, okay, instead of releasing this feature that'll get us more customers, let's go sink time, not waste time, sink time into something that might not get us more customers, but in the future probably will let us do X, Y, and Z better or faster or safer. So yeah, it's, I think you have to have a lot of faith in it, and you probably have to get bit by what you just saw to say, okay, when we go into this the next time, we're going to do this right so that we don't get a kick in the ass down the road.
Yeah, but I said that for 4.0 and 3.0 as well, and I didn't learn. So
yeah.
You always think, nah, we're smarter this time. We don't need to do that, or I just don't have the money for that, or I don't. Anyway, we're not going to rehash that whole episode. That's not what everybody's here today for.
Yep. So you were at Big Snow Tiny Conf West last week. I'm sure you guys had fantastic snow. How was the conference?
The conference was, in a word, epic.
Epic.
And I don't use that word lightly. I would have to say that this was the best Big Snow Tiny Conf that we have ever had.
That's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was a little nervous about the conditions because prior to this, Beaver Creek had like really shitty base. And, you know, I was watching it in December and it was like hovering in the low two digits, like 11-inch base, 12-inch base, 13-inch base. I'm like, ooh, that's a little light. And we get into January, and it's not a whole lot better. It's like 18 inches. I'm like, okay. And no, like, I can literally count on one hand the number of major storms that have come through in the mountains of Colorado to contribute to that base right now. That's not a good thing. Like, that's not something I should be able to do. I should have lost count back in early December.
Yeah.
And not this year. So they had one in, like, December. They had one in January. And they had one the day before Big Snow.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's
six
great.
6 inches of fresh fucking powder. It was incredible. Absolutely the best conditions we have ever had up there. And we've always had really reasonable conditions. And it turns out, even if we hadn't had the snow, the conditions still would have been reasonable. They had opened up like 85, 90% of the mountain. I forget what the number was. But it was most of it. And the stuff that you really couldn't go on was like the nasty black runs, the super steep stuff. And that's not what I really end up doing and what a vast majority of the attendees, I think, do. There are definitely some that, like, there was a group of four guys that were like hardcore going on blacks, but they wouldn't like go on blacks all day. They just do it for a little bit. So anyway, the skiing and the boarding was amazing. And it was so amazing, I even threw my back out when I got home.
Just from fatigue or what?
Yeah, score one for being the old guy. yeah, so just that powder. I haven't had a powder day in so long because, you know, I go out a handful of times a year. And when I go out, we're usually on groomed runs. Well, this time we weren't on groomed runs because they didn't groom anything. It was fresh powder. Hell no, they're not grooming that. And it was incredible, but it's a whole different way you're holding your body if you're not familiar with skiing. Powder skiing is very different than skiing on a groomer. And as a result of that extra work and staying in down in that low stance to try to not eat shit and stay upright the whole time, you know, my back just was a little more torqued. And by the end, well, by the time I got home, it was bad. While I was up there, we were going to the hot tub every afternoon, and that made it a lot better. So that was fantastic. I could sit around for 6 hours of talks at night, no problem. But the, the skiing wrenched my old man back a little bit, and that was a little bit of a downer, but everybody really had a great time conditions-wise, so that was excellent. Nobody got hurt. Everybody enjoyed themselves. Everybody showed up on time, like the snow was coming in, and everybody was still driving up, and some people actually had to stop for the night because the snow was getting bad up there, but they showed up the next morning, and it was fine. So that piece of it was truly, truly epic. We really enjoyed that.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. Yeah, that's scary. We were in the similar boat last year with Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe, where we had bad snow until, yeah, the day or the weekend before the conference. And it's like, oh, shit. Oh, thank God. But I mean, I think the real benefit from a work perspective is just getting together and having the talks and all that kind of stuff. Did you guys have anything that you did different or that was particularly good about the format this year? Or was it pretty much the same format and style of last year and things that had worked before?
Yeah, the format didn't really change. We did 6 talks a day for 2 days, so that's 12 people. And then we had a break for dinner halfway in between that. So we did 3 talks and then dinner and then 3 more talks. And then if people wanted to stay up, they stayed up and talked. I think one night we were going till like 1 in the morning. The other night we were going till like 11:30 or something like that. So it definitely goes beyond the 10 p.m. ending time. But the talks were fantastic. I thought it was – if I had to weight it for masterminds versus teaching sessions, it was definitely mastermind heavy this year. Mm. And I think the mastermind really spurs a greater discussion. It definitely stimulates the group. And in fact, there were a couple of people that after they originally came with a talk, then they heard the talks the first day, and some of them completely rewrote their presentation and decided that they wanted to go a different direction with it based on what they heard the first day.
Hmm.
So that's pretty incredible that somebody's willing to like shift it up and they're like, oh, wow, that really amazing thing just happened. I want some of that instead of just doing my presentation or whatever.
Sure.
So that was really encouraging. In fact, one of the guys was telling me that he was going to give a presentation on anxiety, which would have been a fantastic topic. But after he heard everybody's mastermind sessions, instead he decided to go and present a topic. And now he's executing on that for his business and has already gotten some feedback from a couple of customers he's reported in the Big Snow Slack group. And they're super excited about this idea. So he's like barreling ahead, and he was kind of feeling like, I'm a little stuck. I don't know what I want to do. And this like totally re-energized him. So, you know, that was awesome to hear that somebody was getting that incredible kind of ROI out of Big Snow.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. That's great. That's really great. Yeah. And the mix of people was kind of similar to last year. I know you had like a kind of a decent variety of types of businesses and people.
Yeah. Everybody that was there this year was more sassy. If you will. So we had like one guy with a pseudo productized service, but I think he's adding a SaaS component to it. So I think it was still appropriate. Like, so I think because everybody had, you know, there were a couple of productized service people, mostly SaaS. And I think because of that, the conversations were very focused around those aspects. But even if somebody came without those things, there's always so many other conversation elements that you can pull out of it to say, oh, that's how you handle customer support. I didn't know that. I could do this over here. Oh, that's how you handle hiring. I didn't know that. I could handle this over here. Even though you may not be a SaaS business, there are still general things about running a business. In fact, it came up with somebody that they – and this guy was like – you know, I'm not going to name who it was, but he is a very experienced person in our circles and definitely runs a business. He didn't know about the S-Corp option to be able to split your salary and dividends, so he wasn't paying as much taxes.
Yep.
And we were all on him like, dude, how could you not know this? But it's, you know, what's obvious to you.
Fire your CPA.
Yeah, well, what's obvious to you is not necessarily obvious to everybody else.
For sure.
And so we were able to share that, and I think he's going to save some money on his business next year as a result of that. So that's, you know, that's great.
So what you're talking about, just for reference and for the listeners, so you can be an LLC but file taxes as an S-Corp to separate some of your personal income and dividends, right?
That's one of the two options. So the other is to be just a straight up S corp, okay. Where S stands for small corporation in the United States. And so under IRS tax law, the S corp allows you to say you pay yourself a W-2 salary, and then anything else in the business that's above that salary that goes to the owner of the business is considered a dividend, and it's taxed at a different rate.
Yeah.
So your salary gets all the taxes taken out of it, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, federal, state, all that, yada, yada, yada. Dividends don't have all of that. They just have federal and state.
Right, right.
So it does actually save you some money depending on how you split it. And you can't take like a dollar – you know, in your salary and the rest in dividends, because the IRS sort of frowns on that. And you're basically putting a big fat audit target on your back if that's the case. But, you know, if it's a reasonable split, you can totally get away with that as a, you know, a tax reduction measure for your business. And yeah, he wasn't aware of it. And we're like, oh, dude, yeah, you totally need to be doing this. So yeah, there's just unexpected value you get out of things having these discussions where somebody's like, oh, I had no idea that that was available.
Yeah.
You know, me personally, there were some great resources that came up. Somebody suggested adding a resources channel in our Slack group so that when somebody's talking about something during our mastermind sessions and nobody had ever heard of that, they just dump the link in there later and everybody can go back. And that was super helpful because that stuff, the discussion is flying a mile a minute and the suggestions are going as 100 miles an hour. And it's hard to keep up with all of that, especially if you're trying to write it down or type it. Even I'm taking notes on my laptop, and I miss stuff a lot of the time, and I'm a pretty fast typist just because it's going so quick.
Sure.
But, yeah, that was really fantastic. And, you know, last year I had gone there, and I had gotten beat up about some things. And so when I came back this year, I was actually prepared because I knew it was a lot of the same people that were there, probably like 75% return attendees. And I knew they were going to ask me the same questions again this year if I had done anything, if I had changed this, if I had made any shifts in my business. And so I came prepared. I had two spreadsheets and a whole bunch of stuff. And we had like – so I ended up having like a second presentation to all these people that were interested in it late one night. And, you know, they were hammering me on the details about it. But in the end, they were like, yeah, all right. We feel like, you know – I passed and I made the right decisions, or I was making some decisions that they thought were a reasonable direction. But I'm glad that I had spent all that time preparing for those things, because otherwise it would have been just another, you know, smack Dave upside the head kind of session. But walking into that, knowing that you're going to be challenged at a very deep level, makes you better at your business, because you've got to know these things cold and you've got to be prepared. You know, it's not just preparing the numbers and showing a spreadsheet. It's really understanding the why and the how. And, you know, it just makes me think more deeply about what it is I'm trying to do, why I'm doing it, how I'm going to do it, when it's going to happen, and all of this sort of stuff. So I truly appreciate the mindset that Big Snow kind of puts me in every year. So I've been super excited about this since we started selling tickets in September. So now I'm in my post-winter doldrums now, where the skiing is not nearly as exciting because I don't have Big Snow to look forward to anymore. But now we've got MicroConf coming up at the end of April, so I've got that at least.
Awesome. It sounds like a great event, both for the skiing and the everyone that attended and the stuff that you took away. So that's fantastic. I can tell you're totally energized. That's fantastic.
Yep, I truly enjoyed that. I'm sorry that you weren't able to be here this year, but it was the first time that we had all the guys from East, Brad and Brian, both came.
Oh, good.
And yeah, so that was excellent. Brian had been here a couple of times. This was his second. Brad, this was his first. But yeah, they enjoyed their time out here, and I think they'll be back.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah, you know, we've gotten since we so we decided, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, not to do our event here just because we didn't have a lot of people really excited about it this year. Since we decided to close it down, I've had several people say, "Hey, when is Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe? I want to come, blah blah blah." So I got to do a better job of organizing myself and publicizing it ahead of when we start selling tickets next year because I'm bummed because we've had a great snow year here this year. We've had a ton of snow, and I mean, all the everywhere has been open since like Thanksgiving. So yeah, I gotta do a better job because I really enjoyed our time last year and am missing it a little bit this year. But yeah, so we have FemtoConf coming up here in about 3 weeks, so the first weekend in March. So it'll be in Darmstadt with Benedict and Christoph. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be a really nice kind of like mini microconf. So that's what Femto is. So yeah, I'm looking forward to just because I mean, man, it gets kind of weird and lonely just being like in a bubble all by yourself and doing something like Big Snow Tiny Conf or going to FemtoConf or whatever. Just meeting other people that do what we do in person and talking for a couple of days is massively valuable. I think anybody that doesn't do it is really missing out, both from like a personal perspective, because I can tell like you're really energized. I probably will be very energized. I know it was after MicroConf Europe, like spiritually almost, like from a work perspective, but also like tactically. Yeah, you learn like, oh man, I'm paying a bunch of taxes I don't need to, or wow, this is a great resource to hire people or whatever. I always just love the chewing the fat with everybody, you know, talking shop and stuff. That's where I learn the most and kind of get the most insights, and it kind of like lets you reflect on your business a little bit while you're talking. You know, someone's talking, you're like, "Wow, that's definitely me, and I've screwed that up." I just have like so many of these light bulb moments that are so valuable, and I think there's no substitute for it. So yeah, that's awesome that you guys had such a good event, and I'm definitely looking forward to having our own event here in Germany in a couple of weeks. It's super valuable. Yeah.
I hope you're capturing all those emails of all the people that were asking you about Big Snow, and then
Shitheads. Yeah.
specifically, and then specifically personally emailing them before you send out the main blaster email to warm them up, so that these guys are knocking at your door the day that that thing opens. Because I know you were frustrated about, you know, not getting enough signups, but it sounds like there are people there that want to do it. You just gotta hammer them harder, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we gotta have half the tickets sold before they go on sale, really. Because, I mean, it's a different dynamic here with like, there's no like 12 bedroom cabin at any of these ski resorts in Europe. Like, it just doesn't exist. So, like, to rent a place is a very different kind of thing. Because I know, like, the guys in the East, at least, they rent a giant house. And that just would be super, super expensive here. So, we have to do things a little different in terms of that. But, anyways, nice. Well, it sounds like it was a great event. I'm glad everything went well. That's cool.
Yeah. And I definitely came away with some actionable stuff for recapture, and I've been actively working on that since my return. So I'm very busy now and very focused, both of which are making me very happy, I have to
Awesome.
say.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What kinds of things are you looking at? I don't want you to sort of spill the secret beans, but what kind of things are you looking at working on?
So one of them was, you know, I talked about the fact that I was doing the Shopify app, and several people were like, "Have you really beaten up the Magento market?" And I'm like, "Well, here's the deal." So I showed them kind of the Magento Shopify trends, and everybody's like, "All right, well, it's a different kind of market. It has a different growth going on right now. Like, Magento is kind of decreasing on the higher end. Shopify is on a rapid ascent." But, you know, you also don't want to spread your marketing efforts too thin. So when you're starting to do, like, one of my goals for 2018 was paid acquisition. And so I talked about in this in my presentation here that I want to do Facebook ads. So I'm starting to work with that. I got some excellent ideas about like specific kinds of articles to use that can pull people from Facebook mode but thematically tie them to e-commerce. So I'm basically targeting a very specific audience but with Facebook-y kind of content. And then using that, I can capture email addresses and I can also remarket to them later. So this was a trick that one of the guys actually did with insurance agents on Facebook.
Okay.
And he's had this amazing run with it. So I'm not going to reveal too much about the actual trick until I've got it out there and running and I know it's working. But I have to say it was very innovative to be able to switch people from Facebook mode into serious business mode, because I think that's a lot of the struggle that we have. You throw something out there and people are like browsing cat photos and looking at high school reunion notices and things like that. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, you know, come check out my business website. And they're like, what? I'm not thinking about that right now. You're not a cat, GIF. So he found a way to bridge that. And so I'm definitely excited to try that out. So that's definitely something on my short-term must-do list. And I think I can actually do that so I can try it in both markets, like Magento people and Shopify people.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't necessarily have to just do Shopify at this point, although obviously since the Shopify app is out there, it's worth it. And then one of the other things that I was really I don't want to say beat up about because that's not really accurate. But one of the things that I really needed to focus on was just promotion in general. And so having a series of ideas of what's going to happen with the Shopify app and what is it that you could distinguish yourself about in the Shopify app. And, you know, there's 45 competitors in the store. How are you going to look different to all of these other competitors in here? And so, you know, there were some of the classic stuff about focusing on a niche market. You know, if you know that you're dealing with 50% apparel stores, can you make yourself the email marketing abandoned cart solution specifically for fashion?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been really thinking about that, trying to figure out how that looks logistically. Is there a way I can do that and make it work? Because if I look at the keyword intents, people don't really search that way. They're just searching for general stuff, abandoned cart Shopify, abandoned cart Magento. So I don't know how I can make that work, but it's definitely something I hadn't really thought about. I was sort of thinking, there's no way I can niche down any further. I'm in Shopify. That's my niche. But that's not really a niche if you have like 100 other competitors that are out there and you all more or less have the same set of features. I mean, that doesn't differentiate you very much.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I'm thinking hard about and trying to figure out what that looks like and how it would work.
You know, one thing that we've done a little bit in that respect and that we're looking to do more is creating specific landing pages for different audiences and driving traffic or creating links and backlinks to those pages. So like for Castos, we have our homepage is sort of like, yeah, you can use Castos with WordPress via Seriously Simple Podcasting, or you can use it as a standalone, like if your podcast website is on Squarespace, or if you don't have a podcast website or whatever, you can use Castos by itself as a hosting platform and to manage your feed. But all of the links that we send from WordPress.org to Castos.com are to a specific page on the site that's just around WordPress.
Yeah, that's a totally smart strategy because you want to take somebody from a context where they say, oh, podcasting and WordPress,
yeah,
and dump them onto that page that says, I am the podcasting thing for WordPress.
Yep.
Like, because if you do it any other way, you start to lose people. Like, you get a huge bounce rate on landing pages where that's not the case. And I had to do that with Schedule Watcher ages ago. I tried generic landing pages, and I just didn't do very well. When I had something more specific, that's when I was able to get better conversion rates and better lower bounce rates at that point. So.
Sure. But it might be something you could test even. I mean, because it's not like,
oh yeah,
I don't know, how many kinds of Shopify stores are there? Even if there's a half a dozen, create a half a dozen different landing pages and split test whatever driving ads to them or whatever and see what performs better. And it might not be your ideal audience, but it's the one that's going to convert the best and pay you money. So that makes them your ideal audience kind of by default. So
anybody who's got cash and wants my solution, they're my ideal audience
right
now. Let me tell you.
Because, I mean, it might just be that the features that you have work for them and their unique situation with their store. I mean, I think that's something that even now, a year and a half into owning Recapture, is probably still something you're figuring out, is like exactly what different types of store owners need, right?
Yeah, I'm better at like the more generic e-commerce store owner stuff, but the specifics of a particular niche still are not, you know, that's another level of depth I haven't penetrated yet. And then even if I penetrated it on one side, like there's a dozen more right next to it that I haven't penetrated yet. So yeah, that I think that kind of expertise takes years to build.
Sure. Interesting.
And then some other stuff that I've got kind of boiling in the background is I'm shifting my content marketing to a different set of articles so that I can basically have an autoresponder that when I've driven the paid traffic here, that I have something for them to follow up with. And I thought it was the abandoned cart thing originally. The abandoned cart thing just isn't resonating. Like, I think that's too basic. I think people are already like, I understand what to put in an abandoned cart sequence. That's not hard. What else can you tell me about running my store? What else am I not knowing here at this point? And having studied some other landing pages and some sequences, I see similar content to that for people that are trying to sell their services as like a store builder. And obviously they're targeting somebody in a similar audience to mine. So that was kind of eye-opening, and so I'm retooling a little bit of the content with respect to that. And, of course, as a European, you know this one's coming as well. We've got GDPR compliance, the General Data Protection Regulation, that is due on May 25th, 2018. And I've already gotten people asking me about it on Recapture, so I've already had to spend the time digging into this, and I got a page up on that today. I'll publish that pretty soon, and I got to send something to all the customers and say, yep, we're going to be compliant. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we still have to do. Here's what you need to know about us and all of that sort of stuff. Oh, my God, what a fucking headache that is.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's amazingly complicated. And, yeah, I heard just like last week that every business has to have a representative physically in the European Union. Yeah.
No, that's like, not true. That's not true. No, somebody's making shit up there. I've read the regulations. You don't have to have a physical presence in the EU at all, and you don't need to have a physical member from the EU or living in the EU. You don't have to have any of that.
Okay. This person I respect a lot, so I'll have to follow up on that to see. But I was thinking, oh, well, yeah, okay, so anybody can pay me $20 a month, and I'll take your mail for you and scan it and send it to you. So just just let me know if you want to be that compliant. But no, man, GDPR is a huge deal and applies to everyone, whether you're a European business or not. If you have customers in Europe, you have to be compliant. And I think it's even more than that, because like this dependency kind of dynamic really falls into place where, like, if your recovered abandoned cart recovery tool is not compliant, then your drip tool is not compliant, and then your business is not compliant. Like, it's just a web that probably will never be sorted out, but the fines on it if you get busted are massive. So it's definitely something
that 20 million euros or 4% of your global revenue.
Yeah. I mean, definitely something that you should like make a very solid effort to say, if they call, to say, well, yeah, but I did this, 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 and this, so that they probably will be like, okay, fine, but you should do X, Y, and Z also and not get that massive fine. But to just say, yeah, I'm in the US, I don't really care what all those crazy people in Europe think, is not cool. So yeah, definitely worth spending a day on to kind of check the box at least.
Nice. Yeah, and in my case, I have to spend a little more than that. Like, we're going to build in the features so that people can say, I want you to turn this on, and you know, here's a link that they can click, and they'll be, quote, forgotten. Which, ironically, in order to forget somebody and to remember that you've forgotten somebody, you still have to store their fucking data.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, how weird is that? Like, in order for me to comply with this regulation, I have to store a record that says, yes, Bob is now forgotten. So right. That when Bob comes back, I specifically can ignore Bob.
Yeah. Jeez.
I know, it's weird. It's super weird. But anyway, you know, stuff like that is being built, and then there's a data retention policy and a data protection agreement, and oh god, yeah, it's just so much stuff, so much stuff. So that's on our development list now, and my guy is working on all of that, and he's doing a great job. But yeah, it's just lots of shit to do, not getting all done as fast as it wants, or I want. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
How about you, man? How are things going? I heard you acquired a SaaS.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that something you want to talk about here?
Sure. Yeah. No, it's fine.
Oh, yep. Ho, ho. All right. Spill the beans,
scary.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no. So things are going good. We are on a personal side, we're on vacation this week. So we are in Sicily for a week, and it is beautiful. We just got here yesterday, but it's beautiful. So traveling for a week, podcasting on the go, it's just constant like juggling of schedules and stuff. But no, it's good. Everything is great. I've been skiing a little bit because the snow here is fantastic. On a work perspective, I've been working a ton. The end, since you and I haven't done like an update episode, gosh, in a month probably, we had a relatively flat January, which is interesting because like the end of the year, so like December and January, are really busy months typically in podcasting. And so it's like, you know, we should have seen a big uptick. We didn't really. I mean, we definitely grew by like, you know, whatever the 10% or whatever that we've been growing, but I expected like a lot. So that was a bummer. We've been working on better support, better onboarding, because our trial to conversion ratio, like trial to paid conversion ratio, dropped by like 40% last month.
Ow.
Yeah.
Ow.
So I mean, that's
ow.
But it was like 65%. So I attribute it to the fact that our number of new trials went up by about 30%. So like overall, we increased the sort of like total increase in MRR by about the same as we had before, but it just felt worse because we were losing more trials. So I think it's kind of natural to say like, okay, the more people you get in the door, some of them will be lower quality and they'll churn or fail to convert. But it just kind of, it's worse than not getting a new trial is like to get a trial and then not convert it. So that's been something I've been like looking at myself about, and not myself, but like our business and our onboarding sequence and how we present information to customers and what our support looks like. And so it's been like a lot of introspection about that. We had someone on support who has been doing a great job, and they have moved on to something else. So we're having to kind of start from scratch on the support side of things, which is tough. And we have a lot of customers, and we have a lot of free customers too. That we definitely support. And so that's been really challenging in terms of my time in the last 2 or 3 weeks. It is kind of picking up a fair amount of that support burden and then bringing someone new on and training them. The good news is we have somebody new. I really like him. He's in the U.S. time zones. And so I think once he gets up to speed, it'll be great because I really like the guy. I trust him already. He's learning the ropes quickly and handling some tickets, but he's not a developer. So he's less costly than the other guy, but he's taking more time to kind of bring up to speed. But I think overall, it'll be a good solution in the long term, but it's definitely been just disruptive to have someone from our little bitty team kind of leave and then, you know, have to kind of find my time to replace what he was doing and bring someone else on board and train him and stuff. So that's been tough, but Castos is going well. We've released some features recently that really solidify the platform and give our users the things that they really need. So that's been cool. And yeah, we're on track this month in February to have our best growth month ever already, which is fantastic. Woo! Yeah, no, it's fantastic. So I think some of the work I've been doing in the last few weeks is starting to pay off. So yeah, I mean, we've already grown this month as much as we did last month. And we're recording on Valentine's Day, Dave. So happy Valentine's Day.
And happy Valentine's Day to you. I heart podcasting. This is the part where I'd hold up my hands in the shape of a little heart there. And
that's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. But, But yeah, so, and yeah, so one of the things that's been kind of lurking in the back of my mind for since October, I guess, when we got our new visa, is part of our new visa in France is that I have to start a software business. And anyone who's done it knows that starting a software business from scratch is something you don't want to do. And so I've not wanted to do it. And I've been looking to purchase something really, really small to just kind of check the box with the government here to say, yes, I have a software business, we're working on it, we're making some money, but it's not, you know, we're not going to get rich off of it. And I've been looking on a couple of websites, and these are really cool resources. I wrote a blog post about this. I haven't blogged in a long, long, long time, but I blogged about this after we made this acquisition. The two websites that I've been looking on are borderline.biz and transferslot.com. So they're both like places where people sell side projects, basically. So like, yeah, I built this thing. It doesn't have any customers, or I built this thing and it's like 90% done. I just want to offload it. So we bought salescamp.io, which is a referral marketing tool. So the best example I can think about this is like Dropbox, right? So Dropbox has the when you sign up, so it's like, hey, refer a friend and get 50 megabytes free, right? So then you drop in one of your friend's name, and then Dropbox gets a really hot lead, and then they can go market to that person. And then in return, Dropbox gives you like 50 megabytes free. So that's what this tool is. It can build all sorts of referral marketing campaigns. So like that one, or for an e-commerce person, say like, hey, refer a friend and get a $10 gift card to our store. Or like the King Sumo kind of plugin that I think we've both used to build like these viral giveaways. Like, hey, refer a friend to our giveaway and it'll increase your chances of winning this whatever, like Podcast Motor has given away a really nice podcasting microphone before, or like this bundle of five different SaaS tools that are worth like $600. One person will win. The more people you refer to this campaign, the higher your chances of winning. So we can build that kind of campaign. So yeah, this is our new business. So SalesCamp is definitely kind of a priority for us now because it has some things that we definitely need to do in terms of development. And it's built on Ruby on Rails, so I can't use my existing team that's in, you know, working with WordPress and Laravel. But our good friend Andrew Culver turned me on to a fantastic group in Ukraine that I'm already working with, and they are absolutely amazing. I mean, these guys are fantastic. If anybody is looking for Rails help, let me know. I definitely, definitely, definitely recommend these guys. They're an agency, which I typically try to kind of shy away from, but I think like the work and the scope of work and the, I want to say like the duration of work that we need to do on this is the kind of thing where like we can work for a month and get like a handful of things done on this app to get it like, you know, whatever, like that 90% point to where I can just go market and sell for a while. And then we can have them come back in and do some more work maybe. But it's not where I need like two full-time people right now that like will be employees of ours. So hiring an agency in this standpoint is nice because these guys come in, they have like a QA guy, a project manager, a front end, a back end, a designer, all this kind of stuff. So I can just say, I want to build a thing that looks like this, this, and this, and send them a bunch of screenshots. And then like they've already built half of it. It's fantastic. So yeah, I mean, the tool had a lot of the core functionality that you need. We're doing a lot to kind of spruce up the edges and like the UI, and I'm doing a lot in terms of looking at how to market it. So it's fun to pretty solidly know that I have two tools that are relatively built out to really focus on kind of fine-tuning the product a little bit, but really, really, really just focusing on marketing. So more and more, I'm letting myself, which is like the hardest part, is like letting myself just focus on marketing and sales and running the business, but not trying to like get into learning how to develop or design or any of that stuff. I just am offloading all of that kind of stuff and focusing on how to get more customers. Yeah, because right now SalesCamp has zero paying customers.
Oh, there's the catch.
Yep.
Yeah, but that still sounds pretty fantastic. But, it doesn't have zero customers at all. It has non-paying customers, right?
Yeah. So we have a list of about 800 people that either signed up for like an early access list or were in trials but didn't convert. And some of those are still like in trial period. So yeah, we have a lot of people that I've been starting to reach out to in small groups and say, hey, what didn't you like? Why didn't it work out? What are you using otherwise? And once we get a couple of things with like how we send referral campaigns and how we present them to website visitors worked out, which will be like next week, I think, we're really going to start hammering those people and start driving some traffic to the app to say like, okay, this is a legit competitor to our competition. You know, let's, you know, start converting some people. Because right now there are some things that are not quite up to par. And so I totally get why someone might not have chosen Sales Camp in the past. But the few things that we need to do to kind of tidy that up are very straightforward. And then like, yeah, anybody who wants to run any kind of like viral giveaway or referral or refer a friend kind of thing could use Sales Camp, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's really slick already, and we're making a few adjustments and improvements that are going to make it really, really nice. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the reality of Castos and Seriously Zimo podcasting, that we have a fantastic organic marketing engine in WordPress.org. That, I mean, we get customers every day signing up, and they're free. I mean, they're not free because we have to support all of our free WordPress users, so there's definitely a cost there. But coming up with a strategy to acquire new customers in a subset of marketing that I'm not really familiar with is a little tough. So, like, this is after I'm like, okay, pull the trigger, because it's like, I sent this email to this guy on like Friday, because this is like definitely not like FEI is not involved in representing this guy. It's like, this thing is online. I emailed the guy. He's like, yep, here's the deal. Here's the app. I signed up for a trial. It looks great. I'm like, okay, let's do this. We do it over the weekend, and it's like, it's done. So I get the app, and I'm like, okay, now what do I do? But I mean, I'm definitely looking at this and saying like, I don't know where to get my first paying customer. I don't know where the people coming in for trials are coming from. So some of the things that I'm doing with Castos don't apply. So like we've started really working one-on-one with some affiliates for Castos, and it's really, really doing well for us, because like the podcasting space is just like a very specific self-contained space where like all the podcasters talk to all the other podcasters. And so like, it makes sense for us to partner with strong affiliates to say like, hey, you have the number two search engine for podcast hosting. You know, you have the number two result in Google for podcast hosting. I want to be in that article, and we will pay to be in that article. And it's working out for us. But for me to say, I want to pay to be on some article for referral marketing to target a particular type of audience, I don't know who that is yet, you know? So like you're talking about like, I don't know what kind of Shopify store owner I want to target. I'm in a little bit of the same boat to say like, referral marketing can apply to a lot of people, right? So like a SaaS business or an e-commerce store or a service or a local business. I don't know who the best fit for our app is going to be. So we're going to look at doing something more general, like Facebook ads probably, to start driving those people in to see what type of people convert. Because I think doing something like outbound email would be really tough because I have no idea who to target. We're going to start doing content, and we've gone through the process of building a content strategy and getting some writers on board. But it's a little bit of like finding out who our ideal customer is at this point as like a first step to get those first few paying customers in, and then kind of fine tuning and narrowing down on that a little bit. So it's been a fun last, whatever, 2 weeks in that respect, and a little bit daunting, but it's really exciting. I tell you that the exciting thing about the, maybe the most exciting thing about it is the pricing structure that this app and other apps in the business have is probably like recapture, but like any email marketing software, like the number of, we call them subscribers, like the number of people that, the number of new leads that you've acquired as someone who runs a referral campaign is what dictates your price. So we have like tiers. So like up to 500 new subscribers or leads is this price. And then, you know, it goes up from there. And it's not something that like resets every month. So like the ability to have expansion revenue is naturally baked into the pricing model, which is great. Cause I mean, I think with Castos, we see like, we just need more customers because our customers can never pay us more money, you know? And like, even if we change the pricing structure to like, some of our competitors have a variable pricing structure, but it's only if you publish more content. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, you and I are not going to start podcasting four times a week. It's where we would have to pay more for Libsyn, you know? So like, most podcasters will never pay a podcast hosting service more money. So I think for us, it says, why complicate matters? Why not just say 98% of our customers fit really well in our $15 a month package? Why confuse everyone? Because it is kind of a selling point for us. Say, it's simple. You don't have to understand megabytes and uploads and all this kind of stuff. You just pay us $15 a month, publish your podcast, and everyone's happy. If someone's way out of line, and we have a couple of them, then we go to them like, hey, you know, you're publishing 7 episodes a week that are 3 hours long and you have 15,000 listeners. We need to talk. But I mean, but the nice thing about SalesCamp is like, if you have a referral campaign that has 15,000 people that you've gained as new leads, you're going to pay $300 a month, you know, and you will be throwing your credit card at us to get that those new leads, you know. So I'm really excited about like getting into that part of that business, because I think it's, I mean, look at all these really, really successful SaaS apps, and they have the ability to let their customers be successful and for them to be successful along with them. So that was probably the biggest reason that I pulled the trigger on it. I was like, this is a business that can really be a big, big business. And so it's worth the time to build an audience and a user base from scratch, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I have two comments on that. Number one, sounds like you've got a lot of learning to do about your audience. And from my experience in Recapture, I can say it's going to take you a lot longer than you think it will.
Yeah, no doubt. Yep.
Even when you're getting in front of customers and talking to them directly and having email conversations or chat sessions or whatever, so the sooner you can literally get in front of a customer and find out, you know, what are the objections to not signing up and what is it you feel like you need for this to be valuable to you and whatever that is to get that product market fit and, you know, product founder fit and customer just inside the customer's head, that's going to take a while. So don't underestimate that time. And the other thing I would say is, now you've got three things on your plate. And this comes from a guy who has many things on his plate as well. You're going to be distracted. So you got to decide what's the thing that's going to take your time, focus, and money. And that's not an easy decision to make. And, you know, one of the things that I think came out of Big Snow for me is that focus is killing me in certain ways because I'm spread too thin even amongst three things, if you say plugins, freelancing, and Recapture.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't be like Dave. That's my advice. Don't be like Dave. Don't spread yourself so thin that you're suddenly wondering why you're struggling in multiple areas when the reality is you need to decide what's the most important area and focus on that area at the expense possibly of the others. So
yeah. No, I mean, I have very strong feelings about that, and I know the direction that needs to go. And I think anybody who's listening probably knows what that is too. But no, Dave, your two sort of questions and points are very, very, very well taken and things I've definitely thought of, but hearing them come from you is definitely salient. I am wanting very much to talk to more customers, and I know it will take a long time, and I know that focus is something I have to have because, yeah, sometimes I just sit there and I have 800 Chrome tabs open, and I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And how can I convince myself this is productivity? So yeah, I'm trying to time block. I think that's like a simple initial solution to say, okay, I'm going to spend an hour working on Podcast Motor. I'm going to spend 2 hours working on Cast. I'm going to spend 2 hours working on Sales Camp. And that's working out decently. And of course, shit comes up, but I'm trying to do stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, cool. That's super exciting to hear. And I can't wait to. What's the name of it again? Sales Camp, right?
Sales Camp. Yep.
Salescamp.io.
Yep.
So I'm anxious to hear about that. And we'll put the links to the places where Craig was looking for the side project for anybody in our audience who's looking for a little something of their own to acquire. Because those were places that I've heard mentioned in passing, but I haven't looked at in a while, and it's good to throw up links to those because I think other people might be interested in that. So make sure we put those in the show notes.
Yep, sounds good. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, or drop a comment in the post for this episode. And if you haven't already, leave us a review in iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.